COVID imprisoning me. All that I see, empty store shelves taking my soap, taking my bleach, taking my rose, left me with a filthy self. Virus has sent me home with no pay to wipe my butt. There is no way I need sci-fi to save my mind for today, or I'll go insane.
Sci-fi Melody, symptom 143. We're all gonna die!
I'd like to note, in parentheses, that's symptom whatever we are. Other sci-fi games.
No. It's definitely, we're all gonna die!
Yeah, if you're Scott Kennison.
Game over, man! Game over!
Well, at any rate, I'm going to stick with my parentheses. We're wrapping up sickies with, hopefully, by the way, you're sicky of sci-fi, not like sick of sci-fi. You know what? I'm just going to move on. Welcome back, sickies. We are the final episode of the month. If you haven't tuned in, we've got the episode with Firefly. I know, by the way, some of you are thinking the first episode of the month said fantasy or fun time February. Well, we had a FUBAR February, and now we had to back it up to March, so it's March Mad Game Time, since March Madness is canceled now.
March COVIDness.
At any rate, COVID. So at any rate, so we just bumped that back. We were hoping to get an interview with Rogue's Den, but that's not happening anymore, thanks to COVID. So we're just going to wrap up the month talking about our favorite sci-fi role-playing games and video games and how we're using them to either stave off COVID madness or what we hope to do after we get through COVID madness. So why don't we start with role-playing games? And with role-playing games, I think I should mention, we're talking about the paper and pencil type, the ones where you roll dice, not the video game type. That's a little bit later.
You young whippersnappers. There's video game stuff and your PlayStations and your Nintendos and your daiquiris and your, wait, I'm quoting Billy Madison now.
We didn't
now.
Have Nintendo. We just poured salt on snails.
Hey, you had to do math yourself.
Didn't burning ants with a magnifying glass.
Math? That's hard. So, I thought we'd talk about our favorite sci-fi role-playing games. Just make a list here. And I guess I'll get started with the first one I can remember was called Alternity. It was by T. I don't know if you know that. Scott, you wouldn't know this. Thomas, have you heard of it?
No, I have not.
All right. Basically, TSR made this game. TSR was the makers of D&D back in the day. And they were the original owners of it till Wizards bought it. And Alternity was a science fiction role-playing game that was made explicitly to be a D&D version for sci-fi. So it was essentially, you could make any genre of science fiction using this game system. It was a lot closer to D20, but not entirely. And they made a lot of books with it, actually. They made Aliens. They made generic kind of space opera. They had a campaign called Star Drive, which started from their first module, their first adventure, which I suspect was very good, but unfortunately I was running it under a guy named Cedar Lee who, sucked would have been an improvement. So, like, there was a thing in the adventure of a computer virus that takes over a space station you're on, and so there was a code you had to have to break this thing. But he dropped it in front of us, like the notes. And then when I was like, the genus virus code, hey, should I be seeing that? Oh, it doesn't matter. Actually, I think it does matter. This is the code to stop the virus that's shutting down the base. I mean, we're going to die here if we don't solve this. And you just dropped it. I could go up to any computer terminal now and do this. The game's over.
War Machine rocks with a Z.
What's that?
Was the code War Machine Rocks with a Z?
Yeah, that's right. There well, you go. Reference the best Iron Man film. That's a good idea.
What's wrong with referencing the best Iron Man film?
Because you think, well, the problem with it is you think Iron Man 3 is the best Iron Man.
Not film. A chance. Even I came out and said Iron Man 3 was terrible.
Oh.
The automated suits in the house party was, well, I won't say it's the worst idea Marvel ever had, but this weekend kind of was the worst idea they ever had, but it's close.
Oh, Marvel.
Yeah. Marvel. Well, I think they ran that ship into the ground. So anyway, safe also space, with safe that space. Adventure star drive, my character got attacked by what was basically a mini T-Rex, and it slashed me up, so I shot it a bunch of times, only to find out it was a hologram. And then when I said, wait, if it was a hologram and my bullets passed through it, how come it slashed me up? Wouldn't I have noticed? Wouldn't if its claws just passed harmlessly through me? Oh, no. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I can't refute that kind of logic. No. Well, geez. Looks like I lose that one.
Hey, Dork Henderson, I've got him tied up in the garage due to quarantine for the coronavirus because he's not paying attention to social distancing. But he is screaming from the garage that if you watch Star Trek Voyager, the holographic doctor has clearly demonstrated that he can alter his program to be to allow matter to pass through or to be solid. So that's what was happening in the case of your game. Dorf is very angry, and I've told him where the hot pockets are, and he hears me saying this, but he's still cursing you out.
The problem is Dork knows more than this guy did. This guy's no was literally just, I don't know what to say to you, so we're moving on.
It's my world, and it works that way.
He couldn't even come up with that. That would have been an improvement.
Tachyons.
So, tachyons would have been, anything would have been improvement. He could have said ham sandwich, and I would have thought, well, that's pretty good. But no, he just said no. So, there we go.
Is it bad that I wanted to make a Mama Cass joke?
There was a space opera called Dark Matter. There was a computer program. There was a post-apocalyptic world, but I never saw it. I just saw the book. I never read it. But that, since I would rank that up there, and I wouldn't mind trying that one day if I could get a hold of the books and just perusing Amazon. They're not expensive because there's no demand for them. It's not like RPG collectors are clawing for it. It's not exactly first edition D&D box sets or something like that.
I'll tell you what, Rage Master, whenever this we're off of this lockdown here, or not lockdown, but social distancing and asking us to practice common sense, we'll go up to Gamer's Haven and visit our friend Brandon and play some of these games. But I'll toss out there, you know, I haven't played a ton of sci-fi RPG games, just a couple, but of them all, my favorite is still West End Star Wars. And it's because my favorite role-playing character of all time is in there. Max, the Chaos Man, I'm the Emperor, shoot them all and let the Force sort them out, Pain. Max, you blew up that orphanage. Yes, but there were three stormtroopers in there. Huh?
Say his full name.
Max Payne.
Max Payne. Sickies, before you go thinking he ripped off the character, we've said this before, I'll say it again for any new people. He made that character in 7th or 8th grade, and that would have been 95 or 96. So for those of you that are saying you ripped off the video game, wrong. Other way around, folks.
I'll never forget, my first couple adventures are probably my favorite adventures with Max, because the first adventure was a prison break with two other characters I was playing, a smuggler combo, a smuggler gambler combo called the Phogos brothers. And they were supposed to have been my main characters. And this was just the guy I wanted to try out. They died. The shuttle that Max was in exploded and somehow threw him clear. And he landed in front of a line of like 9 stormtroopers, just himself and a blaster, and somehow took him out. Because stormtroopers in our games shoot like they do in real life. But
because Game Master Rage Master back in the day wasn't as strict about those things.
No. And then Max made his break from the prison planet by stealing a stock Gertrude freighter from a farmer. This good altruistic Republic agent steals this farmer's freighter. I don't know.
You missed the step. You didn't steal that freighter from a farmer right away. You stole an Imperial Customs cruiser.
Oh, that's right.
From the prison. And you were trying to fly around in that until I had to bring to your attention, you're flying an Imperial cruiser. Remember that time in the early 90s when a guy stole a tank in L.A. from an army motor pool and drove it down the highway? Kind of caught everybody's attention. That's what you're doing right now.
Okay.
Except your lasers are armed.
So then I got onto a planet and I needed some money. So I joined the demolition derby and I used my real name and I won it. Yeah. And I won it. And they're flashing on the arena, first prize, Max Payne in my photo. And I'm like, no.
Waving my arms around. How many hunters were in the audience looking for him? And
we definitely have to play that one though.
Surprise, Max Payne.
I got arrested. I got arrested on that planet, and I ended up in a police station, and I stole a thermal detonator and blew up the police station on my way out. Who can walk?
You do when you're in middle school. Now, fortunately, in that particular planet, if you look at the planet description, I could look it up now, but the government type was anarchy. So for you to blow up a police station really wasn't a police station so much as it was a hired goons station.
Pretty
and
much.
Not a lot of people were going to raise a problem about that.
Max,
if anything, they might have said thank
you. Again, I definitely think this goes on the list of stuff we're going to be playing.
I still have the character. I love him, but we've had to do alignment checks because Max is supposed to be, like, at best, chaotic good. And at times he gets downright chaotic evil.
There's no alignments in Star Wars.
Yeah, but if there was, you looked at me and said, would you really do that?
A lot.
One time you looked at me and said, you're not a Sith.
So, yeah, it sounds about right. But I think the nice thing about that Star Wars, and this is true of the D6 system in general, West End did eventually make a book just called D6. And then they had different applications like D6 Space and Fantasy. D6 was brilliantly simple because at its core, you had attributes and then skills under that. And if you wanted to do something, there were certain rules for certain things. But if you just felt like it at the moment, if you didn't feel like looking up the rule, you could just say, all right, roll a starship piloting. And if you don't have that, just roll your mechanical skill, roll mechanical and get 17. If you make that, you did it somehow,
right? And
it was really that brilliant.
It was that simple because you could have anywhere from 1d to 6d. Well, you could have more, you could be your attributes could go unlimited, but you'd usually be between 1d and 5d in an attribute, and 5d was almost unheard of because 1D was below average skill for a human, 2D was average, 3D was above average, 4D was professional training, 5D was like the best on a continent, and 6D was the best on a planet, you know? So, then you'd pick a difficulty number.
5D was like Olympian level. Like if you're talking about a physical feat like swimming, it would have been Michael Phelps.
Right, like Michael Jordan's basketball skill might have been like 6D plus 2.
Yeah, so it was really high up there.
Well, these sound awesome, and the one I'm going to put out there is, I've talked about it before, Dark Heresy. It's the Warhammer one, because in this universe, you have literally billions of planets in that universe. So it's, story-wise, you have almost infinite ability to tell stories. But I think the best part of that system and that game is just the insanity, because there's so much craziness that can happen. I mean, you can sprout rings at some point just because you've been corrupted enough. Oh, suddenly grow another head. This system in this game has so much crazy, random insanity that it throws in there. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, you can blow yourself up or portal yourself into oblivion on accident. Oh, on purpose, but that's a different story. But in this game, you have almost infinite possibilities. And in some ways, it's a good and bad thing about this system, is its war and combat is deadly. Like, if you get into combat, there's a very good chance you might have to roll up a new character because you can die from one shot.
I like that. I like that a lot because it stops your gung-ho. I'm going to charge into the middle and I don't care how many times I get shot.
Right. If you go into combat, you probably want to either ambush or be ready for it. If you get ambushed, good luck. Because let me put it this way. A standard weapon in this universe is a 40-millimeter grenade that has a rocket strapped to it.
Oh, okay. So basically, us squishies are dead.
Yes. Now, obviously, you get a little help, maybe a little armor, but not much. But it's like, unless you screw up, you should be okay. But if you decide, oh, I know what I want to do, I will attack that giant space marine that's 7 foot tall, covered in armor, and I just have this little laser, I'm sure I'm going to win.
Think no. Twice.
Exactly. I think that would be a good game to play, and the corruption and the other systems in there kind of add this craziness to it that could really go nuts.
You know, I remember you showing me that, and I was looking through some of those results, and I thought, wow, this is hardcore.
Well, I showed you the Psyker table.
Yeah, the Psyker, that was enough.
Right.
Wasn't there one, like, you get sucked into another, like, a hell dimension or something?
Yes, yes. No, this is the thing. Whenever you do an ability as a Psyker, you have to be careful, because if you fail, and you fail spectacularly enough, you have to roll on that table. And that table's not good, obviously. No.
Nothing on there was good. You just had to hope you got the lesser bad.
Right. You basically crit, you know, you rolled a one, you critically failed. Well, now something bad's going to happen. Now, that was the bad side. The psychic abilities are pretty awesome, but I didn't show you the mutations.
Oh.
There's a whole nother side of this. Because in that universe, you're kind of dealing with demons and just the terribleness of the warp, and you can be corrupted. And other than getting nightmares and stuff like that, you can get these crazy things. As I said, sprout wings, grow a second head. And you can. There's a whole tables for different things that can happen through, you know, corruption. And that's the thing. There's so many different layers and different things that can happen. And in this system, you can have the most spectacular failures and the most spectacular victories. Because almost anything can happen. I've seen the enemy Psyker wipe out his entire team on accident.
Oh my God.
When he decides to... I'm going to use this ability, but somehow I decide to fail. And then, oh, what's this ability? I just brought everyone in 100 yards of me takes a D10 hit, ignoring armor. Oh, wait. I only have 8 health.
Dead. So, in other words, someone who plays that character, basically everyone around them is always looking askance, like, should we be near him when he's doing this?
Well, that's actually true, and that's kind of good, because in this universe, it makes sense. Because in this universe, Psykers are rare mutants, and you don't like mutants.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's the thing where you go, you're touching something dangerous. We know what you're doing.
It sounds like how people are supposed to react around my Mind Melter in our Rifts game, but they don't?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
pretty much. You look at them and go, you know, 100%, you are kind of dabbling with the evil and the bad, and yeah, it's good, but you could blow us all up in a second.
I think I'd be more terrified of that, because just the fact that one of the options is open gate to hell dimension. When you look at the Mind Melter and Rifts, there's nothing that bad.
No, you are correct.
The Mind Melter. I mean, and it's just an accident. Like, the psychic could be trying to just do something helpful or benign, and the next thing you know, oh, crap. And that's all the last thing we hear. Oops.
It's just he just screwed up.
Yeah. And I just looked up really quickly over here. I looked up, you know, the corruption table. Rolling a corruption here, you can become a warp made mute. Oh, wow. This character becomes a demon-like creature capable of reshaping reality itself around him. He gains the demonic characteristic fear from beyond the warp and capable of willpower. Everyone around you must now take willpower saves. You can become a demon.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. If I heard a psychic like that say, oops, no, or whoops, what's going through mine is, whoops, what does he mean, whoops? How bad is this going to be?
No, that was not the, that's the thing. That was the corruption table. That wasn't a psychic table.
Oh.
That can happen to any character.
Oh, well, but you have to do something really evil for that, right? Or is it just like any evil, you just happen to be at the wrong place, wrong time, and sucks to be you?
Not evil. That's not the thing. Evil. You get corruption by touching things that either came from the warp or things that are imbued by the warp.
Oh.
Like, you're supposed to go destroy this stuff.
Okay,
so walk into a bunch of cultists praying to their demon, you might get some warp infection, and you suddenly have to wall, and you might get some corruption just from being there and doing your job.
It sounds almost like Doom, kind of, where you pick up a demon weapon, and the next thing you know, you're in hell.
Kind of.
And you're just like, whoops. And now I'm sprouting horns. Wow, this was a really bad move.
Yeah. And that's, I think we would have fun with that. And I think it would be a lot of fun to play. You know, the three of us.
I feel like I'd like to play that character.
But you know what? I'm worried because Scott's the kind of guy that would deliberately run into the devil's maw. Hey, look, a demon sword. I'm picking up. Oh, goody.
I'd be like, hey, I cast this. I do this. I use this ability. You know, that's the one that accidentally transports us all to a hell dimension. I sure do. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing about
it's worth the risk.
It's you not
just
the
have to pay $6 for your meal.
It's not the worst thing to do in this game. To get some corruption and to do some stuff because it does help you. Just be careful that they don't notice. Because if the authorities notice that you're corrupted,
but that makes sense.
Burn it with fire.
It's like a 5-star in Grand Theft Auto.
Well, a little more ways that if you get noticed as corruption by the, there's no fighting your way out of it.
You can't just drive out of the range of the cops.
No, because if you screw up bad enough, let me put it this way. In this universe, exterminatus is not unheard of, which is basically wiping an entire planet off the universe by dropping bombs on it that will devour every living organism on the planet, turn it to gas, and then basically destroying everything and then burning it.
So it's run by Emperor Palpatine.
Yes. And this happens all the time. Like, the planet just gets destroyed.
So you got a billion planets. What's one less?
True.
Pretty much, exactly.
Especially if you're getting rid of someone who's horrendously corrupted. But that's so sick because it's like...
Welcome to the first trial.
He's corrupted. All right, get him. Wipe him out with extreme prejudice. That's it.
And Judge this first. That's the universe we'd be playing in, where it doesn't. Let me again. The good guys are fascists in that universe.
Ah,
okay. So
that's the type.
Those are the good guys.
Are like the in quotes good guys.
Yes, I'm not saying fascism is good. I'm saying in this universe, the good guys are kind. And the only reason they're good is because this universe doesn't play around. Everyone wants to kill everyone 100%.
Listen, Thomas, I've already isolated you saying the fascists are the good guys and gotten rid of this universe. So it's isolated and ready.
Thanks.
Okay, so watch what you say around Scott.
Yeah, don't we?
I've been building a tape mark of you for years. That's the whole purpose of this podcast. I'm almost ready to release 45 minutes of your audio cut up for a whole podcast.
Why don't you just make a deep fake while you're at it?
But look, I've isolated every time you've said Trump and then put it next to good things that you've said.
I don't think I said his name that much.
It's going to be 45 minutes. All you had to do is say it once. It's going to be 45 minutes of you praising him.
Don't you want to get more so it doesn't sound like, well, the problem with Trump is that...
No, that makes it more funny. That makes it much more funny.
I don't play Trump in that game, because Trump...
Hey, again, I think all three of these games we will definitely have to play once we get out of this quarantine / distancing and can roll dice again in person.
Yeah. One game, I think, you know, Scott, you mentioned your Mind Melter. I wouldn't mind trying again. That is, yeah, it's sci-fi. Why not? It's science fantasy, but Rifts.
Yeah.
Rifts or the space variants, Phase World.
Phase World was pretty fun.
But that, you know, Sickies, for those of you that don't know about Rifts, it's basically a post-apocalyptic game where you are, I don't know, it's like 200 or 300 years after the apocalypse. And most of civilization is wilderness and demons, because these interdimensional ley lines opened up pockets of rifts and all sorts of demons and otherworldly beings have poured into Earth, and magic is real now, and so is psionics. But in addition, you have just pro-human groups like the Coalition, which is a fascist government that runs now out of Chicago, that is trying to take over. You've got the New German Republic. Russia's carved up by different factions fighting for power. Much of Africa is unknown. Japan is divided between a very futuristic kind of like a sci-fi civilization that during the apocalypse, somehow the city of Hiroshima was phased out of the world and then phased back in 3 days later, well after the apocalypse. So all that super tech is there. But then there's also like samurais going around. I don't know much about China, but yeah, it's messed up. And what's nice about Rifts, I've heard this about Rifts. A lot of people like to complain that it's everything in a kitchen sink, that you could have a laser rifle that destroys a tank. Yes, you can. But my argument to that is, well, it's enough rope to hang yourself with. You know, if you want to make a game where it's just people with pistols in the woods, you can. Otherwise, you could make it as balls to the walls as you want, Thomas.
I have no problem with that. That sounds
awesome. Okay. Yeah, exactly. No. I mean, there's different things, but.
Well, I mean, is there a, I have a question. Is there a Fallout? Is there a Fallout RPG?
There should be. Are you checking?
I'm right now looking that up.
There must be. There's a board game. I know that, but
I know about the board game. But I'm like, is there an RPG tabletop?
There ought to be. There should be, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah, because that would be interesting to play.
Well, that's the obvious setting. It's an easy one. It's already set up, especially if you want to go with like Fallout 1 and 2, the pre-Bethesda years where Bethesda got in there and deuced all over it.
Ah, it does look like that it does exist.
Yeah. Is it old or new?
New. It's a new one.
Like how new?
Definitely within a few years. I mean, it has Bethesda's logo on it, so it has to be within recent history.
Yeah, yeah. Does it happen to say what system it is? Or is it falling under the same old D20 that everybody else uses?
2D20?
All right, that sounds like a D20 system.
I'm just looking at it now. So that's using the company's 2D20 system. Yeah.
All right. I'm a jerk. Well, okay, I don't know what that is, but I'm a jerk. I don't like D20 at all. And it's a very petty reason, Sickies. I'll admit it. I own up to it. But my reason for not liking D20... Two reasons, really. One, when they came out with D&D 3rd edition, D20 is so different from 2nd edition that it's like, oh, thank you for completely upending everything I own and wanting me to buy new stuff. Thank you very much. You suck. And the other reason is because when I played Star Wars D20, you know what? I don't care what anybody says. D6 Star Wars is the best because of its simplicity and ease of use. D20 Star Wars, I'll never forget, you made a feat called Throw Lightsaber, and it did not include a component to return the lightsaber. It's like, what? Why would I want that? Like, who wants a lightsaber? Who wants to throw a lightsaber and just be like, it's okay, you keep it. I don't need it.
Back in 19-dickety-2, we had to say dickety because the Kaiser stole our word. I had a bad experience once, and it soured me from ever trying it again.
Yes, that's exactly right. D20 can blow chodes.
Dear President Trump, please pass a law not letting anything change.
No, I hate D20. Change. No.
Okay, Scott, you misunderstand. I'm okay with change. Just don't make it D20. Okay? And by the way, let's be clear about something. First of all, if I said, hey, Scott, let's play D20 Star Wars instead of D6, you wouldn't jump up and go, yay. You'd be like, why? What we have works. And two, this isn't an OS. I'm not like saying, I'm not going to upgrade. My Pentium is good enough. No, it's not an OS. Why do I need to upgrade a game system that I already own? Like, Sickies, if this were on camera, you'd be looking behind me right now at a plethora of roleplay books. I've got 2 shelves of Star Wars material from West End. Why should I get rid of that? Because Wizards of the Coast decided to take it from me. Because they decided I have to buy their crap. Oh, and by the way, since I'm on a rant, the new Star Wars role-playing game from Fantasy Flight with Disney's logo on it, mind you, the new system, Scott, wait to hear this. So they have 3 different players' handbooks. One of them is called Edge of Empire. And it has if you want to play smugglers, bounty hunters, otherwise fringers, you have to buy Edge of Empire. Now, let's say you bought the player's handbook for the Force, Destiny of the Force. That has all the Jedi characters. But wait. I want to play a bounty hunter. Oh, well, you have to shell out another $60 and buy the Edge of Empire player's handbooks. There are 3 different player's handbooks. So if you wanted to bought the Star Wars one with the Force thinking, "Well, I'll just, you know, use that as my PH." No, you won't. Not if you wanted to play a rebel pilot or something. Now, you have to go buy the Rebellion book for that.
So in simple terms, they've split up a whole bunch of their characters into different books.
It sounds like pretty terrible standard corporate cash grab.
You have to spend, what is it, $180 if you want to get all those classes.
Now, I can understand doing a basic core handbook for like the basics. And then if you want to do like expansion-wise, that makes a little more sense.
Sure. But, like here's a bounty hunter. If you want to have other bounty hunter types, buy the bounty hunter book. Okay, fine. But when you're like, no, these 5 fringer classes, they have to be in this book for $60. And, oh, what's that? You want to play an Imperial TIE fighter pilot? You have to go spend $60 on another book. Go ahead, Scott, because go ahead and defend this.
Should I? Oh, no, imagine the creator stupid, wanting to make money off of their idea.
What's that?
Imagine the horror of the creator wanting to make money off of their idea.
Yeah, but this isn't the creator. This is Disney. This is Scott Kennison invented a machine. I bought it, and now I'm abusing it. And I didn't make it. I didn't earn it. I didn't deserve it. But I'm going to abuse it.
I mean, you know, Disney. Disney's Disney. You think they're not going to try to make money off of it?
No, but the thing is, of course they will. But there's making money and there's Martin Shkreli.
I'm surprised that Disney closed during the COVID outbreak instead of saying, COVID can't survive in the happiest place on earth. Come on in.
Well, I guess Disney doesn't run Florida like we thought they did.
No, they just don't want you to know that yet. This is part of the deception.
Ah, I see. I see.
It's okay, not time for them to step out into the open yet.
Okay, that makes sense.
Rest assured, the Orange Emperor takes orders from the mouse.
Okay, that makes sense. That's a deception. So anyway, Siggies, we've got Alternity, which you'd have to go online to get those books. Those are old. But ironically, getting the original Alternity books is probably cheaper than buying modern role-playing games. Same with Star Wars, if you want to do West End, which is what I recommend.
West End is the best role-playing system I've ever played. It has the ability to be as complex as you want the story to be, with game mechanics that are designed to simply keep the action moving.
Right. And ironically, Fantasy Flight re-released the first edition of that game, and it's cheaper to get the main book, a Game Master screen, I think it is, and the Star Wars supplement. It's cheaper to get that package than it is to buy the player's handbooks with every class. So if you want to buy something new in the plastic, go buy that.
I mean, between the two of us, Mark, we've got almost everything there, right? In West End, I think.
No. I wish.
But we've got a ton of it. I know that.
No. We've got enough. But the collector in me is saying, no, you're not done yet, stupid. So, but then.
Single book.
Yeah. But then we got Rifts and any sci-fi that goes along with that. What was the other one we mentioned? Oh yeah, there's the one, Thomas, what was it called? Dark Heresy.
And if you want the actual books, they run, it's very popular. So that's not in print anymore. So those can run like hundreds of dollars if you want the books, but, finding a PD, unfortunately, no.
Okay.
But, I do have the PDF. So.
No, you don't. Wink, wink.
No. There's a PDF.
He has the PDF of our show outline.
Yes.
Yes.
I misspoke. But yes, there is ways of getting the system.
Yeah. Now, I suppose, Sickies, we could play these overline if we felt like it, but I don't want to. I like the face-to-face interaction with tabletops, but I guess we might as well segue into, since we're stuck, what kind of sci-fi video games would you use to stave off boredom? And I guess I don't have too many anymore, but I would say the first one would be StarCraft. I actually have the original StarCraft Battle Chest. It's actually right behind me somewhere. Oh, yep, there it is. I have the StarCraft Battle Chest and an old laptop to play it on.
Hey, that is a very good game.
Oh, it's fantastic. I've not even played StarCraft 2 yet because I suck, but...
And that's a very good classic.
It is. Scott, have you played it?
I have. I didn't get too far into it, and that's a shame because it was out before I was really getting into computer gaming, which is only recently. But it was out before then. So
yeah, well, I mean, StarCraft, what can I say? It's got a killer story. It was Blizzard when Blizzard was good, before Blizzard decided to re-release games that, you know, we're not going to talk about Warcraft 3, but... the Warcraft 3 Reforged. But it's got a great storyline. In fact, I remember the original game came with a little book that explained to you what happened. And all that flavor text, this was like back in the day in the 90s when you bought a game like that, or Fallout for that matter, and it came with books explaining what was going on to save space. And then in the game, there was also text, and it was all built on, predicated on storytelling. It was brilliant. It was like, wow, I actually have to read this to know the state of the galaxy. The fact that here's the humans, here's the Protoss, here's the Zerg, here's why the Protoss and Zerg hate each other. Actually, it didn't even describe the Protoss that much. They kept the mystery alive. They basically just said the Protoss are like an unknown race that use these energy nodes, and they just showed up and started blowing planets up to kill any planet that had Zerg infestation on it. And that's how the game starts. You're like, well, a colony just got eradicated. We got to figure out what's going on there.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, there's an obvious choice of the best science fiction game of all time that I'm going to go back and replay. And, I mean, that's No Man's Sky, right? I've actually heard No Man's Sky has gotten decent. No Man's
Sky. Didn't it get better, though?
From what I've heard, it's gotten much better, and it's actually a playable game at this point, but it was just broken when it was released.
They basically got to a point of it actually being a game now, and they actually implemented multiplayer, and they've implemented basically what they promised in the first place, but even then, it's somewhat not great. So it's still iffy.
Yeah, but by the time they got it to that point, everyone logged off anyway. It's like, you're too late. You started delivering on what you promised, and everybody's gone. So
That's part of their problem. They haven't been able to get the people back. If I'm being serious about a game that I'm going to go replay, I'm considering pulling out my Sega Genesis games and throwing it on my Retron machine, which can play Sega and NES games and Super Nintendo games. But okay, I'm going to bust out the Star Trek The Next Generation game for the Sega Genesis.
I remember that game. You were directing me how to play it, and you were like, go here. Oh, no, you don't know what you're doing. Quick, just take any course and get out of there. Hey, did I tell you about the time I once found a Borg cube? Borg cubes are in this. No, but I think it was.
I spent forever trying to find the Borg and going wherever I could. The game will have you run into Ferengi, two different types of Romulan ships, and an enemy called the Chodak. And it's a horrible name, by the way. But the story of the game is pretty boring. And it's not fun. The most fun you can do in that game is just set a random course until you run into a Romulan and destroy it. And then wait for another Romulan to come find you, because if you wait there long enough, they will. And you basically just see how long you can survive, because you'll eventually get to the point where they'll throw two warbirds at you at the same time. Then after you destroy one of them, another one will uncloak. And I think one time I killed like 8 or 9 before they destroyed the Enterprise. But that I would have the most fun, because you could go to the tactical station and you'd have an engineering station where you could divert power to fix the shields or the weapons or the engines, depending on where you were taking damage. But it was, to me, probably the most fun you could have playing Starship Combat in a science fiction game at the time. The other old science fiction game I would probably go out and pull, if you remember, Burning Force from the Sega Genesis. It was one of like the first games that they made.
Is that like the fantasy version of Shining Force?
No. You're on a hover bike, basically, and you're traveling around, and like you're not really moving. The bike is just moving around at the bottom of the screen to the left and the right. And if you remember the patterns in some levels, you can just hang out in the corner of the screen the entire time and get through the level. But at the time, it was awesome because it was faster than anything we had seen in the Nintendo, and it had multiple different type of weapons your bike could fire, and you could hit ramps and jump, and there were enemies all over the place. And then the third level, you actually got to fly in like a fighter and fight the enemy. Mm-hmm. And you could get through like 7 levels to beat the final end boss of the game. I used to play that game forever trying to beat it, and I'd get so annoyed because I'd get to the last level and it was back before you could save your progress. And I'm like, crap, I got to start all the way over at boring level 1 again that I can beat in my sleep just to get back here to try to beat this. But I haven't played that game in years. I bet I used to be able to get through like the first 3 boards out of 7 without losing a life. Now I bet I can't do that. I bet I might not be able to make it through the first board without dying.
Well, one game I wish I were playing now were Cyberpunk 2077. CD Projekt Red pushed that back. Speaking of Cyberpunk, that would have been a role-playing game if I could ever get the books. But that game looks amazing, and the company has a pretty good rep. In fact, I give them respect for the fact that they pushed the release date. The release date should have been April something, but they pushed it to fall because of issues. And you know what? I'd rather they do that. I respect that.
Well, I mean, these guys have made some good games in the past, and them just pushing it back does not really turn me off, because I respect it for the simple fact they might be on the record doing a good job of correcting it and making sure when they release it, it's set. So yeah, I'm happy.
Absolutely. I'd rather wait. Yeah, I'd rather wait for a game that's working well enough than a bug-ridden mess like Fallout 76. I mean, There's nothing worse than popping a game in first day and then having it so buggy that you can't play it, or worse, like you had once with a patch that was bigger than the game itself.
That pissed me off. That was a Battlefield, I think. I can't remember which one, but I think it was Battlefield 4. I installed it. Like, you now have to install everything onto your Xbox, so I installed it, and that was 500 and some megabytes or something. Mm-hmm. Sizable. And then it's like, yeah, you now need to download this 1-point-something gig update. It's like,
why? That's ridiculous. If it were that big, you should have just pushed the game back a couple weeks or something.
Yeah, because it literally apparently shipped so broken that they basically sent you a whole game in a patch. I'm like, that's insane.
Yeah, which begs the question, what if you had tried to circumvent it and play the game? You would have had guns just floating in the air coming at you or something.
Apparently some people did that. It wasn't good. Like, it crashed. Guns were not fired. Like, it was just a crud. It was so bad that it's impressive that they shipped it. But that's EA for you. So
yeah, not to go into a rabbit trail, but it couldn't be worse than Anthem, where some systems were getting bricked.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Only now does Activision go, yeah, Anthem's dead. We're not even going to try. We're giving up. We shot that horse a while ago. It's dead.
Yeah. But luckily, though, I'm right now playing, and I know Scott's also playing this, Phoenix Point. That's a good sci-fi game.
Yeah, why don't you guys, because I mentioned in the first episode, you guys would talk about that, and what's the other one? The XCOM one?
XCOM 2? XCOM, but...
Oh, no, well, you're talking about Stellaris?
Yeah, why don't you guys talk about that for a minute?
Well, Phoenix Point is the continuation of XCOM. They've added a lot of things into that have really taken the tactical level of this game up to the point where you have to make sure that you equip your soldiers and your strike team with extra ammo. It's not just a given that your soldiers are going to bring ammo with them anymore. So that's a key factor to me that they've added to that really takes it up a level.
Ammo also has weight to it.
So ammo has weight. There's a max carry weight. The enemies are more diverse, I think. And it's adapts to you as you go along. And it really learns your strategies and your techniques. And then it says, okay, the AI says, okay, we're going to change this up so that those strategies don't work anymore.
Oh, yeah. I've now run across almost all my enemies I'm running across now have leg armor. So I can't shoot them in the legs anymore. Because that was my favorite strategy for a while. But I'm going to definitely agree with you that this took a lot of steps to improve things like, you know, aiming. And because nothing pissed me off more than having a 98% chance to hit something while standing next to it. And somehow in XCOM 2, my guy's missing. That always ticked me off because it's like, you're standing next to it. You can't miss. But if you're at that range and you miss, doesn't make sense.
That is the best thing that they did was take that factor out of this.
You actually aim and there's a chance, you know, where you at least know it's going to land somewhere in these circles.
You shouldn't know that you've got a 75% chance to hit. Well, that is my dog knocking stuff over. I apologize for that. We should say Phoenix Point, if you've never played XCOM, Phoenix Point is a, I want to say it's a turn-based tactical game where it's not really a grand strategy game. It is a turn-based tactical game in which
it does have an overmap to it, but
does have an overmap, but basically you're going mission to mission. And when you're not in missions, you're doing research to build technologies and diplomacy to build relationships, but you're going to tactical strike missions with a team of somewhere between 4 and 6. And when you get there, there's a map board with a bunch of enemies and you move in a turn-based fashion. You take your turn, they take their turn, and you try to resolve the mission that way. Now, that makes it sound incredibly boring, but if you played those turn-based strategy games, you know that there can be a lot of depth and fun to those games if those are up your alley. And this one is one of the best at doing that.
Yeah, and it also gives both hit damage on both the enemy and you, which means you can be crippled in legs, arms, head, and it has effects. So things like that happen, and this has so many layers on top of layers on top of layers, and they already have full DLCs already planned.
Right, so I'm glad I bought the season pass for this one.
Absolutely. And this is crazy how many techs and levels and stuff that's going on. Diplomacy, missions, there's many different things going on. It's definitely top of my list of games. I don't know if it would be my absolute favorite, but definitely up there at the top. And Stellaris, again, I know Scott's having trouble getting through the first part of that game, but that's for real-time grand massive strategy games, that would be in mind.
Yeah, I've been getting back to Stellaris and I'm starting to figure out more and more what I have to do with it. I can see that there's a ton to it. I just need to get to it.
Yeah, that thing is massive, and I do love it for that massive thing it does. That at points you can have a billions of population, thousands of planets, and it's like giant alliances fighting. And they've done some nice expansions, and people have done some workshop stuff to it. There is something Scott would love, which is they turned the game into the Federation. They have a Star Trek mod.
I did see the Federation's mod out there as a DLC. I didn't know how good it was yet or not, but I did see it.
Who cares how good it is? It's Star Trek, right?
Well, the mod's pretty good because it does add quite a few different techs and races, and every race is different, and missions, and how if you play as the humans, you form the Federation, and you form the Federation in different ways, and it has different mechanics, and they did a very good job. So I give it a thumbs up. But it only problem is it always gets broken whenever an update comes out. So that's always the problem. But then they fix it and it's back up.
As long as they're able to fix it. I mean, you got to know when an update comes out, there's going to be a problem. It's always a problem when an update comes out. No matter how much you test it, when it gets out there in the real world, there's going to be something has gone wrong.
Oh, yeah. And again, it all depends on the update. I mean, if it's a minor update, it normally can take a 1 or 2 days and everyone's back on track with their mods. But if it's, you know, like we've changed the entire mechanics of the game now, it might take a bit. Because, I mean, Stellaris is not the same game that it that it was when it first came out. I mean, they've changed almost everything to a point, which in some ways for the better.
How so? How would you say they've changed it for the better? I mean, like, you're the Stellaris expert here.
Okay, well, one of the bigger ones and the most recent massive change, in my opinion, was they changed how planets themselves worked. In the past, you get on a planet, you just populate it, big deal, whatever. You get a certain amount of minerals, certain amount of energy, certain amount of food, whatever, from that planet. That's it. Well, now each planet has so many sectors, and you can choose to have a mining sectors, agriculture sectors, city sectors, or, you know, energy sectors. And each of those sectors give you different stuff. And so you could have a planet dedicated to food production or a planet dedicated to mining or energy, 100%. And then you can build, you know, your structures on top of that. So that's a complete change from what they did before. So now you can have specialized planets, and it really helps. The other thing they changed was a marketplace, like the entire universe marketplace. You can now sell and buy resources. You couldn't do that at the beginning. That could hamper you. You could be sitting on a stockpile of food, but so what? You couldn't sell it. You couldn't do anything with it. Now you can sell it and buy what you need. And that, I think, was one of the bigger ones.
Gave you more diversity to really fine-tune what your federation or empire or your whatever you want to call it, confederation would be.
Exactly. And the specialization is huge because normally I play it and have one or two massive aggro planets just producing food because that's what they're good for, and I don't have to worry about that on any other planet. It makes me weak if one of those planets gets taken out, but it definitely helps. And most of the more recent updates have been more cosmetic and new races and different things like that. So, I mean, I think they're coming out with a newer one, or they came out, I have to check, but the one that came out recently was organic crystals. Like one of the new species is a crystal. So just basically crystals floating around in space, and they're sentient. And they have their own mechanics of both battle and, you know, gathering resources. So
that seems pretty cool, though. Seems like a pretty good update.
Oh yeah. And again, that's what I like about the Paradox, and when they make games, they do a lot of updates. It's both good and bad in a way, because the good part being they constantly update it and put new mechanics in and constantly change stuff for the better normally. Except it's also bad because almost all of this is DLC. Now, some of it's optional DLC, like the mechanics will change, but you don't get, like, you don't pay, you don't get the crystalline creatures. That can be good. You can just live without that.
How pricey is the DLC?
One DLC is not too expensive. It's normally, I want to say, depending on the DLC, it's $15, sometimes $10. Depends on the DLC.
Okay, but that's not too bad.
Yes, it's not bad, but it can add up quick.
Well, Do they ever have like a sale where they do a?
Yes.
Okay. They gotta have clearinghouses at some point.
Oh yeah, they have sales, so it's not like you're never going to get on sale. But when it first comes out, it can be like $30. I mean, it can be expensive DLC sometimes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, I mean, one of their games, I think Crusader Kings, if you want to buy it straight up on not on sale with all the DLC, it's like $300, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it can get expensive how much there is, but they constantly update and constantly add new mechanics and stuff. So it's a trade-off, and I like it in a way because it never really dies. I mean, some of these games they have, and they're still updating, putting DLC out, is years old. Most of the time, after, you know, 2 years, a game doesn't get any love. Any. So.
Well, yeah, well, it depends on the game, too. Like, okay, the franchise I'm currently addicted to, and I've been for years, is Assassin's Creed. And, like, the last one, Odyssey, you play the DLC and it's like, all right, well, what else is there supposed to be done? The way they write the story, Cassandra, the main character, she winds up getting hold of a staff and then getting basic immortality. And she's just waiting around in the ruins of Atlantis for the next person to come along and take it and know what to do with it. So you're waiting until Lila shows up in the year 2020. And she's just there, and you're like, well, what story is there? I mean, there's nothing to write a DLC about. So.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem, and that can happen. How old is Stellaris itself? That's a couple of years old, isn't it? I can't remember now.
I don't know.
Stellaris was like 2016, right? Let me check.
Something like. When did that first come out?
I want to say it's 2016, but let me check. May 9th, 2016.
Yep.
That's not that old.
Check Crusader Kings 2. That one's older. But again, that's 4 years. They're still releasing new DLC for that.
Well, you should be when you create a sandbox as big as Stellaris. Why should you walk away from something that is A, it's a functional universe to release DLC in, and B, you spent a ton of money in it to build it.
Oh yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you, but
I think you're starting to see that like in Destiny, where they talked about releasing Destiny as a game you could play for 20 years because they want to create the basic sandbox and then just make new seasons of it, basically.
Well, especially if there's a demand for it, why stop if you're still going to make money off of it?
Right. Crusader Kings was 2004.
Okay. So 6 years so far on that one. I mean, I'm not saying they should stop at all, but that's my type of thing where I like them for doing that because they're keeping up and constantly updating, constantly giving you more stuff until they come out with, you know, Stellaris 2. They're going to be continuing to update Stellaris, which again, Stellaris 2 is years away at best.
Correct.
So that type of thing I like because it never goes out really. Who knows what's next in their update?
So we got, let's see, StarCraft. Scott's going to play, what is it called on Sega? Other than Star
Burning
Trek?
Forces. Burning. But you know what? And you know what?
Burning?
Yeah, Burning Force. But
Burning Force?
It's not really a science fiction game, but it crosses over enough. There is a real good chance if this drags on that I go load up Shining Force 1 and 2, which are still my favorite classic RPG games for any system ever made. Shining Force is your original, probably your JRPG. And for those of you kids who've never played this game, you get a, you are the hero and you start out with a party of four. And it really is the first like semi open world concept where you're walking around wherever you want to go within the Shining Force world. And as you, if you talk to certain people and go certain places, you can get new characters and new story arcs. If you don't go there, you'll just never get the character.
Interesting.
Yeah. And sometimes you can talk to someone and they won't join you until you talk to them at the right point in time. At some point, you get to promote your character to a different class. And depending on how long you wait to promote them or how early you promote them, their development path will take a different a branch tree, basically. In some ways, it was a very, very advanced game for its time. I remember Shining Force 2 until I figured out that the boss battle condition existed, where if you kill the boss, you win. I was stuck on this piece where a wizard puts you on a chessboard and he shrinks all of your guys down to the size of chess pieces. And unless you beat the other team's chessboard army, you're stuck and you can't get out. Well, I had fought the battle so many times that I was out of enough gold to resurrect my deceased party members. So I was down to a short party and I realized I had no gold left and anyone I lost this time was just going to be permanently lost.
Ooh.
So and this was a game that I probably had like 12 hours of playtime into to get to this point. And I would have had to start over at the beginning and work back, and you'd have never gotten back to the same, you know, exact scenario you were in because people would have developed at different levels. And at that point, I figured out how to use the Ender's Game. The enemy's gate is down. Go directly for the boss with everything you have and kill the king and you can win. I was that close to being done. And then I got out of there and I was able to get some gold and resurrect my lost party members. But
speaking of RPG, I'm going to be getting into a, I don't know if either one of you guys have heard of it, Divinity 2 Original Sin.
No.
I think I vaguely heard of this, and I just haven't seen an update recently.
Okay. This is, speaking of RPGs, this is an RPG, basically. And I'm talking advanced. because if you have a puddle of water on the floor and you throw a fireball at it, you're going to create steam.
Mm.
And wow. that steam you can't see through. Ooh. And so, I mean, like, this is layers on top of layers. Like, ice you can slip on.
Wow.
You can create ice by shooting off, you know, frost at water.
Oh, wow.
You can melt ice and make it water. And things like that. Layers on top of layers on top of layers, like, interacting with each other. Like, how poison interacts with fire and how fire and electricity interacts with blood on the ground. You can make electrified blood. You can make electrified holy fire. You can make different layers and layers of stuff, and everything interacts with each other. And it's all like an RPG base, like how your characters are built, you know, your skills, things like that. And it's really in depth. I mean, I have only been playing this with a couple of buddies of mine, and that's only time I play it. And I have 113 hours in, and we are currently maybe nearing the end of the game.
Wow.
Maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
113 hours. Wow.
You get your money's worth.
Yes.
I would say.
And this is crazy in depth on how everything interacts. It's insane. Different races have different abilities, different skill sets, different armor classes, all of this stuff. And every time you play this game, it can be unique because you might find something you didn't find before or things like that. And different mechanics, teleportation. It's insane. And again, I'm playing over 100 hours and I still haven't completed the game.
Wow. I mean, that's just, and you're not done with it either, is what it sounds like either. Like you're ready to keep going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once we complete it, we're probably going to go through it again and maybe try a game master. Because there's a, like, basically a GM type game mode where you can set up a map and put your characters in and make enemies and stuff. So, I mean, this is pretty much a tabletop RPG, just in some ways letting the computer do all the calculations and doing way more than you would ever do. I mean, I would not ever sit there and calculate, wow, you threw a fireball over here, so you created steam, and this is how much steam, and no, I'm sorry, no.
That's pretty amazing, though, that the game is that far in depth and things that it's doing there for you, calculating steam from a fireball hitting a puddle of water. That's pretty amazing.
Oh, yeah. There is a level to this game that I'm impressed at because there are so many different layers to it that it's a turn-based type strategy combat, because when you go into combat, it stops, like real-time stops, and then goes, each player has turns, and you have turns, the enemies have turns, depending on your speed and initiative rolls, who goes first and stuff. And then when you do that, you take your turn, you have so many points, action points to play with. Everything you do, you think and you calculate and you try to figure out what you want to do when. Because sometimes if you do something wrong, you screwed up your teammates or your entire game and you will be dead. Because there are so many interactions. And sometimes you don't even think of what some of these interactions do.
112 hours in and you'd be dead. That sounds like someone could get killed. In real life.
Luckily, there is no permanent death, because luckily you can save. But let me put it this way. We have loaded multiple saves because, hey, whoopsie, we weren't prepared for this combat and suddenly we get wiped. So things like that. Or you figure out, oh, my bad. That was the worst possible thing we ever could do. I shouldn't have shot that fire arrow at the poison cloud and blown us all up. Whoops.
Whoopsie.
My bad. Did anyone wince the last time we saved? Oh, an hour ago? Crap.
So save often.
Yeah. Save very often, but be careful. Because this game also has a whole bunch of conversations and stuff. You can miss missions and conversations in this game. You can go, you can beeline straight towards the main objective and don't do that because you'll be underleveled massively to complete it. But there's so much you can miss or accidentally fail. So I'm going to probably be playing this tomorrow and another 12 hours in, maybe, and see where how dead I am.
Well,
I might make it another one third of the way through a chapter, maybe.
Well, that sounds like a good recommendation. I was gonna break down and possibly buy Doom Eternal.
Oh, I saw gameplay.
Just because it looks awesome. And okay, it's not really sci-fi, so to speak. It's more horror, but
I count it sci-fi.
It's Doom. It's a classic. So, and I never played the 2016 Doom. I played Doom 3, which I thought was awesome.
I've heard this is basically 2016 on steroids.
Okay, well, if it's anything like Doom 3, it's going to knock it out of the park. I thought Doom 3 was brilliant.
No, this is kind of going back to more original Doom.
This is
a lot of running and gunning and just craziness.
Well, I mean, so was Doom 3, but I mean, if it's more like 1, whatever, that was a great one too. Also, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, the music also rocks.
Okay, I honestly haven't heard. I honestly haven't watched much of a gameplay footage. I'm just like Doom.
Yeah,
Doom.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And I just this morning watched someone was playing this on the hardest difficulty, and I was watching some of his gameplay. And I'm like, this is insane. I mean, totally insane.
Okay.
Also on the hardest difficulty, it looks like it's murderously hard.
Yeah. Well, I am Death Incarnate was always, or wait, that was Wolfenstein. This is Nightmare, I think it was called in the original Doom, the hardest difficulty.
Yeah.
Nightmare was the hardest one, so. But yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to break down and get that. Because I just drove by in a GameStop and I saw the poster. I was like, maybe I'll get that. Because right now, I don't need to play it because I don't know about you guys, but I'm binging a show. I'm binging Star Wars Clone Wars so I could catch up to season 7. And I don't know about you guys, but as a Star Wars fan, I got to say, man, I was missing out. I'm on season 4 now. Some of these battle sequences are incredible.
The Clone Wars series was pretty good, yes. Absolutely.
I don't know why I shut myself off to it, but now I'm looking back thinking I shouldn't have. I mean, yeah, there's a few sucky episodes or not so great, but I'm on a set right now of battles, and it's incredible. Just the way they depict everything. It's like, this is a great show. So if any of you sickies are Star Wars fans and you haven't watched Clone Wars, I recommend it. I'd watch The Mandalorian first, but.
I have a question. The most important question I have in this, because I know Thrawn is in this series. Do they treat him well?
That's in Rebels, and I couldn't tell you yet because I'm not there.
I'm sorry. Okay, you're right. It's Rebels, not Clone Wars. What am I thinking?
Yeah, no. Clone Wars, assuming if Thrawn is alive, he's not even a factor.
You're right. You're right. He's too far back.
If you're going to expanded universe, he's alive. He's in charge of a fleet of the Chiss Ascendancy, and they have encountered him, but in outbound flight, but he hasn't become a galactic player yet. Now, in the new canon, I don't know what they did with them. Scott, you actually read the book, so maybe they told you what happened.
I read the first book. Look, in the new canon, Thrawn is... he's outcast from the Chiss Ascendancy for ordering an attack that they didn't think he should have ordered, and they cast him out, and he's living in isolation on a planet, and the Empire lands, and he alone ties up a squadron of stormtroopers and attack squad for like 2 days by himself. But they eventually find him. He gets himself captured and he does it on purpose. And he says he has something of value to offer the Emperor, and he gets to meet with the Emperor, and they end up putting him through the Imperial Academy and fast-tracking him through. He was an admiral in the Chiss Ascendancy, but they send him to the Academy as like a lieutenant, which is really weird. But then that first book takes you from him being a lieutenant to Captain Thrawn. And I think at the very end of that book, I'm trying to remember, but I think at the very end of the first book, they promote him to Admiral Thrawn. And you finally start to see, you know, you're used to seeing the Grand Admiral Thrawn, and you're like, okay, this is, and then it ends with him on his way out to the unknown regions in charge of the Chimera.
Interesting.
Is it any good?
Yes. It's written by Timothy Zahn and it's excellent.
Okay.
I am surprised that no one has taken him to task yet for generalizing an individual based on qualities of his species. But, you know, it's still very good and very true to Thrawn.
Okay. I will have you give that a read then.
It's probably the only thing in the expanded universe I'm going to waste my time reading. I think I do have the second book and I just haven't read it yet.
All right. Well, I finished Aftermath. Don't.
No. Anything written by Chuck Wendig, stop.
I did it for completion's sake and I regret everything.
Two stormtroopers. Under the cover of night.
I'm stuck more on the blaster cut open and there was blood flowing through. 3 pages later, the blaster seared me and I'm burnt. So wait, Chuck, do lasers cut or burn? Or is there a setting on the blaster you forgot to tell us about?
Yeah, I'm still stuck on Mon Mothma mothballing the fleet in the middle of the war.
Yeah, the war's wrapping up. It's time to shut down the military.
Wait. Yeah, that would be like in 1944, the Allies said and Stalin said, we've got Hitler on the run. We can begin demilitarizing right now.
Yeah.
I think we're good. Yeah. Hey, we're good.
Forget about them surrendering. Don't worry about them surrender.
We beat Germany. I think we could pull the Pacific Fleet back. I mean, Japan's going to give up, right?
Oh, crap. Maybe this Battle of the Bulge seems tough. Man, I wish we hadn't demilitarized now.
If we demilitarize, they'll do it too.
Oh, wait, that never works.
I know.
We can't defeat the Empire by becoming the Empire. And if we have warships, we become the Empire. No. It fits with the whole Disneyverse thing of... of the Rebel Alliance walking out, and they literally say, if this means fighting, we're out. If I have to dying for my freedom, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was okay with this coup until I had to bleed for it.
You mean we just can't talk Palpatine out of power? It's not going
to
work?
Well, apparently, according to that movie, if they just showed the Senate the Death Star, somehow the Senate would act and everything would just work out.
Yeah, because really? I'm sure the Senate will succeed in stopping Palpatine where the entire Jedi Order failed.
Yeah, because let's get this straight. The entire bureaucracy and military is controlled by Palpatine. And a bunch of pontificating senators pass a bill that's going to work. That's going to work. That'll do it.
Look,
he'll be like, oh my gosh, you passed a bill. I guess I'm just going to give up this whole bid for overlordship.
I'm going to play Poke the Rage Master here one more time, but that sounds bad.
Right now, because of social isolation, you're like, it's safe to poke him.
I think everyone, even though Rage Master doesn't like this theory, and everyone knows this theory by now, I really think everyone should rewatch the prequels under the false assumption that Jar Jar Binks is a Sith Lord, and the Sith Lord and Palpatine is his apprentice, and rewatch the entire 3 movies under that impression, and then go watch 4, 5, and 6. It makes sense. Oh, also the other thing you have to do to change the whole thing, rewatch the prequel series where Luke and Leia are Obi-Wan's children. And all the scenes make sense too. It works perfectly. all the scenes look so different if Obi-Wan has been getting it on with Padme too.
Oh, you know what we could do then? We could just decide that the species called the Glorm and the Gnipkinobs are controlling Palpatine. Since you said we're on false assumptions.
But it wouldn't work as good.
The false assumption game too.
Just set it aside and go watch the prequels with the assumption that Obi-Wan is getting it on with Padme in episode 3 and that those are Obi-Wan's kids. And that you know, the you turned her against me thing. I mean, it comes off totally different. And that Jar Jar is the true Sith Lord the entire time and Palpatine is the apprentice. Then when you go watch episode 4, Obi-Wan's lies get compounded over and over and over again. And it's like, never. Why didn't you tell me, Ben? Oh, that Vader's your father? Okay.
My rebuttal to that and everything you just said is, oh, those people with too much time on their hands, who like to sit around and make crap up.
Look, would it be any worse than the whole Skywalker saga right being now about Palpatine's granddaughter?
Yeah, and I'm not watching Clone Wars going, what if General Grievous somehow
Okay, wait, one sec. In the show Clone Wars, if I'm correct, Obi-Wan seems to very heavily imply that he has a relationship with the leader of the Mandalorian planet.
Yeah, that's not disputed.
Okay.
That's not disputed at all.
I'll just tell you, remember that scene in Attack of the Clones where Obi-Wan says, you're not that finely attuned to her, my young Padawan, and he says, Owen, you are? And he said, maybe.
Hey, Scott, I got an idea. Why don't you look under every rock and look into everything you want on your own?
Hey, listen, for the Sci-Fi Melody listeners, I think you'd have a lot of fun. And I think at the end of it, you'd be like, mind blown. Look, Jar Jar Binks first appears like doing a giant backflip out of a lake. And if any other character did it, everyone's right. You'd go, oh, that's a Jedi. But this is just clumsy Jar Jar manages to pull that off.
Okay, Scott, you're right. Every theory you're making up is right. You hear that, Sickies? Everything Scott said is right. He feels good about himself. Pat on the back. 5 gold stars for Scott's brilliant use of seeing what George Lucas did not write.
Congratulations.
It's not Scott's deep meaning today. It's Scott got the Rage Master enraged.
Hey, guess what, Scott? I'm just going to make up all I want. Kirk and McCoy had a thing. That's why they always hung out.
See, you're wrong. It's Kirk and Spock. And there's actually a lot back there where Gene Roddenberry once said that if he could have got away with making the characters gay, he would have.
There you go. They're gay. They're just hiding it. They're in the closet, Scott.
Listen, I can show you a ton of episodes of the original series where, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm not going to fight it.
And this is what happens when Scott watches Star Trek every day. You get bored.
I'm not the only one. It's a mainstream Star Trek fan theory.
Well, enjoy your theory because I hate theorizing. Sickies, I think that's enough because Scott, what happened? Scott doesn't even have to be cooped up and he's making this crap up.
But I am cooped up. I'm getting afraid of open spaces. I've developed agoraphobia in the last week.
Now it's just going to get worse. He's going to start. When we come back to the studio physically, there's going to be papers on the wall drawing lines between Kirk and Jar Jar Binks. And he's going to be like, hey, it's Pepe Silva in the middle of it. Trust me.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. There's a chance that I never leave the house again. I've installed automatic Lysol spray canisters around the periphery of the home. And they go off every 15 minutes to sanitize the air.
I see.
I'm in the process of putting up a giant fence and a bunch of cameras. Hey, getting zoning approval.
You know, Scott, that bunker, right? there was a theory at one time that my asthma caused sickness in the air. But if you light fires all around, it'll get rid of the bad miasma. So give that a whirl.
I could respond with something about my asthma, but
put giant braziers of fire around your house to get rid of the bad air.
That is a fantastic idea. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, the Pope did it during the Black Plague. I mean, he got the plague anyway because it doesn't actually work. But if it makes you feel better, there, Linus.
I actually think I'm going to have to get a flamethrower and sterilize the inside of my house. If I just keep the flames cool enough, it ought to just burn off the germs without burning down the house.
Everyone knows you can create cold fire. It's very easy.
Listen, Mark. Mark, I am like 3 days away from being Mr. Burns when he opens up the casino and he looks at Smithers and he sees all the germs crawling on him and he pulls out the gun and tells him to hop in the Spruce Moose.
That's what I'm saying, okay? That's what I'm saying. That we're going to come into the studio. There's going to be all sorts of theory papers on the wall connecting.
Like Mel Gibson and Conspiracy.
You're gonna have tissue boxes for shoes. Your nails are gonna be really long. You're gonna have, well, I'd say a beard, but I don't know if you can grow one. And then, like, Sarah's gonna be scared.
I can after like 2 months, I can grow a beard that is kind of a shameful thing for a ninth grader.
Okay, so you're gonna have that, and there will be like crumbs in it, I guess. And Sarah's gonna be like, he hasn't come out yet. He's waiting for Pepe Silvio to prove his mass theory of everything. And then we're going to get in and see jars of urine and fecal matter around the studio. And then you're going to have, like, your gun. And Sarah's going to regret letting you get the gun.
And you're going to call me Scott, and I'm going to demand to be referred to as Admiral Kirk Picard.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that. And we're going to be like, well, Admiral, I think it's time we get going. And then you'll say, okay, great. Hop in the teleporter. I'll beam you out of here.
Nobody leaves.
I said, go to the teleporter.
Into the transporter. That's not a transporter. That's your oven. Into the transporter.
I think for Scott, that'll take 4 days.
I think it's time to land the plane, though, because we're at an hour and 27 minutes.
Yeah.
So if you have comments, you can leave them for us at our website at ravinglunaticmedia.com. You can find it on our inactive Twitter account at Sci-Fi Malady. You can tweet at me at Scott2824, or you can use our inactive email account at contact@ravinglunaticmedia.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, or Admiral Kirk Picard might have to come visit you. What's left for them to do, Rage Master?
Stay well, sickies.
And
wash your hands.
Just wash your hands.
COVID imprisoning me. All that I see, empty saw shelves. Wait, crap. I got to start again. Hang on.